Our next guest is somebody I've been waiting to hear from, and this subject, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, whatever word, the green movement, global warming, global cooling, climate change, save the polar bears, whatever you want to call any of this. There's a lot of information out, but our next guest puts a different spin on it probably than I've ever heard, and it gets right to the heart of the matter. He's a historian. Obviously, he's an author. We're going to talk about his book. Green Tyranny is the name of the book. He writes also articles for National Review, what have you. He was at one time an investment banker. He is an advisor to the UK Treasury. He's done quite a bit, quite across the board, but he's singled in on this subject, climate change, environmentalism, green tyranny, the name of the book, Green Tyranny, Exposing the Totalitarian Roots of the Climate Industrial Complex. Wow, what a name. Rupert Dhariwal, what a pleasure. Welcome to the Power Hour.
Great to be joining you, Daniel.
Yes. Now, I listened to a couple interviews because it was my uncle that first heard you, and he turned me on to you, and I was just like, whoa, this is the guy I want to talk to. And in one of your interviews, here's a sentence that you said, and I want to get your reaction to it. There is a philosophical connection between the poison of political correctness, the disease of multiculturalism, and the rise of environmentalism. And I've never thought about those things. I mean, they're all being pushed on us, but the poison of political correctness, the disease of multiculturalism, and the rise of environmentalism. Quite a statement.
The thing that joins these together, well, the germ, if you like, of this was the Frankfurt School. People like Herbert Marcuse. And the Frankfurt School was formed in Germany between the wars, and they fled Germany on the rise of Hitler. And in fact, they first came to Columbia University, and they were post-Marxists.
What does that mean, Rupert, to say somebody's post-Marxist?
Yeah, what that means is that they recognized that capitalism was good for workers, and the workers weren't going to be in the vanguard of the revolution. So they therefore said, who are going to do the revolution? It's going to be minorities. It's going to be students, and so forth. Because they basically gave up on the working class, and they actually thought the working class had been suckered by capitalism because they were into consumerism and rising living standards and newer and better cars and bigger houses and so forth. So they basically turned their backs on the blue collar working classes of America, which you see today, incidentally, in today's democratic politics. And they fermented this, that they came up with this extraordinary view that America, they just fled from Nazi Germany, but America was in a late stage fascist state. And they spread their poison through the universities. So a lot of the awful things you see in today's universities actually originated with the Frankfurt School. And in the 1960s, they picked up, in addition to multiculturalism and the culture wars, which they effectively started, they picked up the idea of capitalism was also destroying the biosphere, and they came up with the idea of ecocide, that capitalism, as I say, was destroying the planet, and they sort of melded this all together. So that's how that's the origin of that quote that you started at the top.
We obviously hear a lot about polar bears dying on, you know, melting ice caps or whatever, and I just look at them, I just have to laugh, because a polar bear can swim about 100 miles. That's all. I mean, it's comical to me that this polar bear somehow stranded on this floating block of ice. We have seen hysteria. We've seen Al Gore. We have seen everything seemingly in Europe much more than America, but it's creeping in America. This concept that, oh, we need to tax you to death. We need to control even a cow fart because mankind is destroying the planet. It seems ridiculous to me. You're a scientist. You're a researcher or a researcher anyway. Please shed some light on this, your perspective.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. right to have a great belly laugh about the polar bear, because the polar bear population, there's a scientist who's done a lot of work on this, Susan Crockford, and all well worth looking up her stuff. And far from the polar bear being endangered, actually, they are thriving, and the populations of polar bear colonies are and have been growing. It is absolute rubbish, the scare story about the polar bear. But it makes, you know, for the credulous, it's something that clearly works for them. But the way I look at it, Daniel, is that, you know, we're told we're living in a climate emergency, a climate breakdown, and we're facing catastrophe. But, you know, when this thing started, it started off in the politics of it started off in 1988 with the Toronto Climate Conference. And there they issued a report saying that global warming was the second worst thing, and the only thing that was worse than climate change would be a nuclear war. But do you think, Daniel, in the intervening three decades that we have, can anyone look at what's happened and seriously, hand on heart, saying we have experienced something from the weather akin to nuclear war? I mean, it is so preposterous. So the forecasts of doom are always just kind of slightly over the horizon, but this scare has been going on so long now that we've actually crossed the horizon. We can see, well, actually, these predictions are complete garbage. And, you know, it's worth having reality checks. You know, when people say the climate is breaking, they've been saying this for the last 30 years.
Is there any... well, I can remember the article in the 70s on Time magazine, now the world's going to be destroyed by the year 2000. I mean, I've seen those articles. Is there any, I mean, it's obvious that mankind is polluting the world. There's obviously pollution going. There's obviously some things going on. But, I mean, I just have such a hard time believing that our climate, our everything is being destroyed because I'm eating meat. Or because I'm driving my car, or because, you know, I mow my grass. It just seems ridiculous to me. Is there, I mean, I don't even know where to go. It seems so stupid, but it's passed off as gospel truth, and now it's being shoved down our throat. Please, you know, give us a sense of reality here.
Well, carbon dioxide is a naturally occurring gas, and 95% of, round about 95% of the carbon dioxide released annually into the atmosphere is actually through natural processes, and the idea is that there's a sort of 5% that we're emitting, humans are emitting, that's making all the difference. But the thing is that whereas you might remember with the ozone layer in the 1980s, in fact, when the Reagan administration pushed the Montreal Protocol to limit ozone destroying substances, well, that was quite straightforward, because there are a very limited number of substances that do that, and they're quite easy to regulate, and what's really important is that they were low cost substitutes. But with carbon dioxide, virtually anything you do will involve the emission of carbon dioxide. And it's not just, you think, well, from electricity, but, you know, when you turn on the light, you use your smartphone, and there is some the cloud is powered by energy, which is, you're emitting CO2. And it's not just that. It's agriculture, as you say, you plow up a field and there's implications for CO2. You have livestock, there are methane emissions. But it's even more ridiculous. You have a paddy field in Southeast Asia. That emits a greenhouse gas. So basically, you have to regulate virtually every aspect of human activity. And it is just preposterous. And to give you an idea how successful the UN climate talks have been, in the 22 years before the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change was signed at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, fossil fuels emissions, annual fossil fuel emissions, rose by 50%, so over that 22-year period. In the 22 years since then, annual CO2 emissions have increased by 62%. So you've actually had an acceleration in the growth of CO2. And so if you were from Mars and you looked at the numbers, you'd say, well, actually, they had an agreement to increase greenhouse gas emissions. And the reason, of course, is because the major emerging economies of of China, India, and so forth, they prioritize their economic development, and they are not going to do what the West is doing to itself, and that is why emissions growth has accelerated.
All right, now CO2. As far as I can tell, there's been times in the Earth's history, especially Canada, where it's frozen now, where it's a lot of snow. At one time, that was thriving wheat fields. There's way more CO2 in the air. I mean, logic, science, everybody who has come on this show has said that actually more CO2 would be better for our planet and for our ability to produce food. Is that crazy?
Not at all. It's actually crazy that people don't look at the data and also look at the science and accept that the one unambiguous thing that one can point to from the increased level of CO2 in the atmosphere is a growth of biomass, of the greening of the earth. And that is just a fantastic thing to have happen. More forest, more growth means more biodiversity. It means more fauna as well as flora. It's a really great thing, and it also means that when you have more CO2 in the atmosphere, that not only do it means that agriculture improves, the yields improve. You actually need less water for the crops. So you know what's not to like. The only downside is that there is a climate breakdown. The climate has broken down, for which the evidence, as I implied earlier, is, to put it very tactfully, is dubious and ambiguous, to say the most.
I'm listening to you, and I've listened to, we've had Rosa Corey on, we've had all kind of people, and this control, the name of your book, even, The Green Tyranny, kind of hints at it. Okay, I'm listening to these arguments about climate change, about environmentalism, about the green movement, and then when I logically examine what they're actually saying, it's hard not to come to the conclusion that, you know, their efforts, well-meaning as some of them might be, is just misplaced, ill-informed, and this is just really a stupid idea. I don't know what else to say. Not the idea that we need a cleaner planet. Everybody would probably believe we need a cleaner planet, but what they're advocating is just, it's asinine. So then on the flip side of that, I have to say, well, then what is the real objective here? And let's talk about that as far as your book, Green Tyranny. It belies something much more than just polar bears and cow farts, does it not?
Absolutely. And I think you're being actually, Daniel, I think you're being really charitable to environmentalism. I think environmentalism not only does it have its origins in some very unpleasant ideologies and swamps, it is about crushing freedom. It's saying people don't.
Well, hold on. Let me interject right there. Let me interject there. Now, see, this is where I think this discussion starts to get weird. Not weird, but confusing for people. Okay, if somebody comes on and says XYZ Corporation is polluting downriver, they're throwing copper and arsenic in the river, it's hurting the fish, and mercury's in the fish now it's hard to eat the fish. Okay. I can look at that and say, well, there's mercury in this fish, and it's probably coming from this plant that's up here that they don't care what they do, and they're just throwing it in the river. Okay, I get that. So when people hear that, they're like, okay, that makes sense. Of course, I love fish. I don't want the fish to destroy. But there's a kind of a disconnect between, you know, my stream is polluted because of the plant, or, hey, well, you need to control every aspect of your life and quit having children, and you can't drive your car anymore. Those are two totally different things.
Absolutely. No, I said environmentalism, not environmental protection.
Huge
difference in that. I think, and what you've seen in environmentalism, and the planet is going to, we're facing a planet catastrophe. Therefore, what the Europeans have done, Daniel, is they said, okay, we've got to switch from petrol-engined cars to diesel. So around the EU mandated that, and they said to the auto manufacturers, you've got these mileage things, you're going to have to, you sell lots of diesel cars. So 50% of new car sales in auto sales in Europe are diesels. And what happened to the air quality in Europe's towns and cities? It can converged with the third world. There was a deterioration in air quality. The sidewalks of major European cities, you can smell car fumes. You can smell these. You do the same in American cities, and the air is clean. Similarly, in Japan, the air is clean. It's breathable. So what you have, ironically, is when you say there is a global catastrophe, you sacrifice the local environment, for this notional, to avert this notional catastrophe sometime in the future. And that is what, another example, Daniel, wind farms. I mean, the whole conservation movement that grew up at the beginning of the 20th century with Teddy Roosevelt and so forth, that was about preserving beautiful landscape, preserving wildernesses. What do you see now? You see rows and rows of wind farms. And it's not just there an eyesore. It means to get those huge, you know, that massive structures, you have to have very straight roads, so you cut those through, you have to have concrete bases, then you erect them, and then something awful happens. They kill a lot of bird life, they kill bats, they kill insect populations that are fed on by birds and bats and so forth. So you actually end up destroying what ostensibly you wanted to preserve. And it's what, you know, it's like the Vietnam major syndrome when he said we destroyed the village to save it. That is the crisis of modern environmentalism.
I've never heard a better description of it. Let's destroy the village to save. I've never heard a better description of this. We got about 5 minutes before the break. The Paris Agreement, obviously Donald Trump was a huge campaign platform, a plank of his platform was to get us out of this Paris Agreement, to not go down this road that many other countries, Europe, especially Europe, wanted to do. Let's talk about the Paris Agreement. What exactly did it advocate? Why was it such a disaster? Why was it so important? And what did Donald Trump accomplish by getting us out of it?
Right, the Paris Agreement was... If we go back a little bit to 2009, you may remember there was a climate conference that was going to save the planet, and that was at Copenhagen. And
yeah, they all will.
Obama's,
every one of them do.
And it was President Obama's first in his first year, and he flew out there. Ironically, when he arrived in Copenhagen, it was snowing. It just snows a lot, these climate conferences, unless, of course, they're being held in somewhere like Bali, where obviously it's very nice for the climate negotiators to spend 2 weeks. Anyhow, Copenhagen was going to be the climate conference where everyone would agree to limit and reduce carbon dioxide emissions. But then what happened, there was a text that was floating around, and it was vetoed. And it was vetoed by, in particular, the Indians and the Chinese, supported by South Africa and Brazil. And that is why the whole thing collapsed. And so then the Obama administration said, well, we've got to keep the show on the road. If we're going to have the climate policies we want to impose on America, you cannot justify them unless there is an international agreement. So we've got to have some kind of international agreement. And what President Obama did, he did a big outreach to the Chinese communists, and they came up with a climate accord, and out of that came the Paris Agreement. And what they came up with was something that was, A, designed to deal with the Chinese and the Indians, that they could go their sweet merry way, and two, that it could go through, it wouldn't need Senate ratification. And the idea was that each country, each party would come up with its own climate plan, and there would be reviews every 5 years, and they'd be tightened up every 5 years. So what this was, if you like, was a form of masochism, that the countries of the West would agree to cut their emissions while the rest of the world would carry on. But the masochists would say, well, at least at some point we're all in the same agreement, and at some point emissions will go down. Now, why this is important, why it's absolutely important that President Trump decided to withdraw, is because he saw that this was a complete scam. I'm going to give you a couple of numbers. American energy emissions, CO2 energy emissions, peaked in 2007 and have now fallen by 15%. China's emissions, which were already higher than American emissions, have increased by over that period by a colossal 40%.
Wow.
Nine years of falling U.S. emissions were erased by the but in 3 years of growing Chinese emissions. And they don't have to, under the Paris Agreement, they're not saying we're going to cut our emissions. All they've said is, well, they might peak sometime. That's it. So he's absolutely, President Trump is absolutely right to say this is a complete scam. I mean, it's just a terrible, terrible deal. So that's what, and if the Democrats want to have a big fight in 2020 over this, the logic is on the president's side. He will see them off. He will see they will be rumbled and embarrassed that they ever thought that they could win a point on the Paris Agreement.
Do you, living in Europe, do you just shake your head? Because it seems like Europeans, you tell me if I'm wrong, I'm looking at this from a distance. It seems like Europeans are taking this hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, yeah. So the British, for example, have signed up. They're pledged to go carbon neutral, net zero, in 2050. And you've got a bunch of people saying, no, it shouldn't be 2050. That's too late. It should be 2030. I mean, it's just, actually, it's a horrible thing to do because, we don't live in a great climate. It's cold in winter. And if you go to net zero, it means you can't heat your homes with natural gas anymore. You have to use heat pumps and all these technologies that are not as good as just...
They cost more.
It costs a lot more. It costs a lot more. So we have rising fuel poverty in this country. I mean, clearly more people die in this country from being cold in winter, particularly elderly people, than from heat in summer. Daniel, it's a form of insanity.
All right, we got about 30, 40 seconds before the break starts. Just to be clear, since 2007, our emissions in America have decreased by 15%, while China's, which was bigger than America to begin with, has increased by 40%. Just to be clear.
40%, yeah. So the numbers are U.S. emissions fell by annual emissions, 854 million tons. China's rose by, 2,586 million tons.
Well, seems fair. Makes perfect sense. So this is about communist China and promoting them. That's what this is about. Green Tyranny is the book, exposing the totalitarian roots of the climate industrial complex. We're going to specifically hit on that when we come back. Is this all just a ruse to help China grow? I mean, really, that's what it looks like. Stay tuned. Rupert Dhalwal on the other side.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Numana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high-fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage I love to eat. Yum!
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM Sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
We got a special. Everybody loves Miracle 2 soap. That's the product, actually, that started the Power Mall. And we have the concentrate. We also have the moisturizing, the regular soap, or the neutralizer. We have all three of them. And the 22-ounce version, we're going to give you one of those free. One, because we want you to try it, or two, people have clamored for them, so there they are. We'll give one free to you if you purchase $150 or more, if you ask. You gotta ask, you gotta tell us, and you gotta tell us which one you want. Whether you order on the internet, you can put it in the notes, you can tell us which one you want, or if you call by phone, ask for the Miracle 2 special. You spend $150, you get the Miracle 2 soap for free. So we'd love to do that for you, and we really appreciate your business. Also, the Strauss Heart Drops, a great interview with Wayne yesterday on sale. The Cold Storm, the Smooth Oregano, the North American Urban Spice products are on sale. Those are fantastic. It was oregano, lamb cream, and clay. Save My Wife's Foot by Brown Recluse. It's truly amazing. I mean, if you saw our bug exterminator can't even believe her foot. He can't believe it. It's been a little over a week, and it looks, it's almost gone. It's down to almost nothing, down to about the size of a quarter, a little, actually less than a quarter now, probably about a dime now, maybe between a dime and a quarter. It's fantastic. So anyway, all the great products at the Power Mall, please consider a donation. If you are calling for an order, just say, hey, I'd like to make a $5 donation or a $20 donation or a $10,000 donation, whatever you want. We will use it. We'll use it to expand. So we really appreciate all your support. The show it's yours. And so you support us. We don't get checks from big corporations. Greenpeace is not writing a check for us. As Rupert probably is chuckling when he hears that. We're not getting Greenpeace checks over here. We get checks from you, and that's the way we like it. So call Jay, 877-817-9829. Please leave a message. She will get back to you, 877-817-9829. Also, later this afternoon, I told this for shortwave people, once a month we're doing this, I'm going to answer the phone so people then can call, you can talk to me, express your opinion or whatever. I had a great time talking to everybody yesterday. Thank you so much. I can feel your your concern, your light, your anxiousness, your hope, your everything. It's fantastic, and it's rising. And who cares what the world's doing? We are rising. Our light is rising here at the Power Hour. So thank you. 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. Look forward to talking to y'all in about 30 minutes after the show. Getting back to Rupert Dharwal, I got the book in hand. I mean, just reading the flap on the book, you know, if I saw this in a bookstore, I would be enthralled. You talk about acid rain. I can remember being a small child and hearing about acid rain like that was the end of the world. Whatever happened to acid rain? Did it disappear? I mean, they thought acid rain was going to destroy dolphins, and now, you know, it's like it doesn't even exist anymore. Explain that process and kind of how that scare came about.
Yeah, actually, the scare had the same origin as global warming, in that they both were originated in Sweden in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And the story goes like this, that the Swedish Social Democrats wanted to build a string of nuclear power stations. And the Swedish, ordinary Swedes, didn't like the fear of that. And they're quite small-C conservative in that way. And so the Swedish Social Democrats said, look, if you don't have nuclear, we're going to have coal. Sweden actually doesn't have any coal, so it would be a new thing. They said coal does terrible things. And the first thing they came up with was with acid rain, no less. And the guy who wrote the first government report on acid rain would turned out to be 20 years later or so the first chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and he said acid rain is destroying our forests and our lakes and so forth. And then 3 or 4 years later, they said, oh, the other thing that burning coal in coal-fired power stations does is it emits CO2, and that will cause the ice caps to melt and global warming and climate change and yada-da-da-da. And what happened was that the Swedes, so they went hard on acid rain, first of all. There was the Stockholm Environmental Conference, the first UN conference on the environment, 1972. The Canadians picked it up. The Canadians then put a massive amount of pressure on the Reagan administration through the 1980s, which the Reagan administration pushed back on. But you may remember in 1988, George H.W. Bush ran as the environment president. And he promised the Canadians, I will do stuff on acid rain. And then what happened was very interesting. There'd been a 10-year federal report on acid rain, and it came out, and the EPA was aghast because they said, this report said, well, actually, there's very limited scientific basis to this scare. And the EPA went into crisis mode, and they tried to suppress the report because the Clean Air Act amendments were going through Congress, which was basically a cap and trade scheme for sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide.
Hey, let me interject right here. Let me interject. What is, we hear cap and trade all the time. We hear carbon credits. Maybe they're related. Explain cap and trade real quick before you continue.
Cap and trade means that you get a permit to, or you have to buy a permit to emit a certain amount of what is considered a bad thing, and the idea is that you will incentivizes you to cut down your emission of these bad things, and to find technological solutions to that. And by and large, cap and trade work. Carbon credits are this, which are different from carbon offsets, by the way. But carbon credits is if you like cap and trade for carbon dioxide. So, but the absolute killer is that federal report was buried because Congress and the Bush administration were just passing cap and trade for to stop acid rain. When here was a scientific report saying there was no point in doing this because these emissions weren't causing acid rain, and weren't causing the damage that acid rain was purportedly causing. So, for example, the state which has the highest volume of acidic lake water is Florida, which is not downwind of coal-fired power stations. And if you remember the Adirondacks, they were the poster child for acid rain. But it then turned out, actually, what had happened was that these the lakes were naturally acidic, and then the lumber trade came along. They cut down trees, they burnt the stumps, and they reduced the acidity of the lakes. So game fish came in, you had trout and so forth. And then the conservationists said, oh, you shark couldn't do this. So the soil and the lakes returned to what they were before. It wasn't anything to do with acid rain. So to answer your question, that's why the problem went away.
I listen to this, and I'm just, you know, you have supposedly legitimate people, you know, they're men of renown, women of renown in our society, scientists, they have degrees on the wall, they have all this. They get up in front of a microphone and all these different conferences with all these lettered names, UN, whatever. I mean, this whole big spectacle, and they're coming out here and spouting and telling me the world's going to end in 12 years, and they're telling me the acid rain's going to, they're telling me that the climate change is happening, that the temperatures are changing. We're finding out that the numbers in the oceans, they've been falsified by NOAA. There's reports about that. We're coming to find out that polar bear population is just increasing. My God, Rupert, this is one of the biggest, this is either, everybody's wrong, or I'm completely wrong, you are completely wrong, or this is the biggest, stupidest scam almost in the history of the world.
Well, that's why the whole acid rain episode is so important, because there you can see what
it's
actually
obvious.
Happened.
Yes, it's obvious.
Well, you can see what actually happened, which was that the EPA suppressed a report, they got it rewritten. You know, most government reports, most reports have an executive summary at the front, so you don't have to read the whole damn thing. This, the one that eventually came out, does not have an executive summary. You have to read the whole thing to get a feel for that actually there was,
and the,
there was
you
no
know.
Smoke. There was no smoke because there was no gun, basically. You have to read the,
And then 16 hours later, after you've read this report that big enough to choke a donkey, your brain is so messed up, you have no idea what you just read.
Yeah.
And then they have somebody
It's summarized helpfully in Green Tyranny, that whole episode. But what was worse was when the EPA was confronted by this evidence, it launched a press campaign against the leading dissenting scientists, who then threatened the deputy EPA administrator with libel, so they had to FedEx out an apology. And that was a scandal. And do you know, at the outset of the acid rain scare, the National Academy of Sciences said the science of acid rain is even more settled than that for global warming. And it turns out the scientific basis of acid rain turned out to be fake.
Okay, this is so important. This is such an important part of your book. This is so important, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody says the world's going to end in 12 years, well, it's impossible to prove that, right? It's impossible to prove it yes or no. I can't prove to you the world's going to end or not going to end in 12 years. Here's what you can do. You can go to his book, Green Tyranny. You can go into this detail, the acid rain scare, all the same telltale signs, all the same pressure, all the same scientists off the rocker, and the tyranny of it, and the community, how it rallied around these ideas, the lawsuits that were involved, the whole thing. Everything that you see with global climate change, they already did this with acid rain. Was there any acid rain? Did it cause a problem? No, we know the answer. You were all wrong. You were all morons. You're all selling the bill of goods. You might as well sell magic beans in a little bag and hope that Jack is going to be at the end of a beanstalk. That's what you sold us. This is a scam. This is the biggest nonsense I've ever seen in my life. Am I wrong?
Well, that is the conclusion you can draw. And there was another episode where the same thing, basically the same thing, with politically motivated, ideologically motivated scientists came into play. And that was the nuclear winter scare. Again, in the 1980s, there was a nuclear arms build-up because the Soviets, if you remember, they put in medium-range missiles into Europe, and the Europeans said to America, said to Washington, look, there needs to be a response, because otherwise we're basically the Soviet Union is going to win the Cold War, because this is a way, we're not going to have benefit from the American nuclear umbrella. So this was a huge, huge thing. So what happened? You had a bunch of scientists led by Carl Sagan, who said the nuclear arms build up, if there is a nuclear war, which the nuclear arms build up will precipitate, there will be a nuclear winter across the whole of the Northern Hemisphere, and it is quite likely that humanity won't survive. And this was designed to undermine the Reagan arms build-up. I mean, fortunately, Reagan stuck to the policy, and eventually, as we know, the history shows that the Russians backed down and the Cold War came to a peaceful end. But if these scientists had their way, that would not have happened. The Soviets would have won the Cold War. And there's something even worse than that, which, again, you'll find in the book. The original impulse for the nuclear winter scare didn't come out from American scientists. It came via Sweden, and it was concocted by the KGB in Russia.
Wow.
The scientists were sock puppets for the Kremlin. And there was a big press conference, a big conference on the nuclear winter about two blocks away from the White House. There was a live video link with the Kremlin at that conference.
Wow. I am – okay, we got about 10 minutes, maybe just a little bit more. Let me give a little bit of a premise and then ask this next question, because this is the question that's begging to be asked. Okay, on this show, we talk quite a bit about the Declaration of Independence, that we're endowed by our Creator, that we have an inheritance here in America. Really, all mankind has inheritance from their Creator, the ability to dominion on the earth, the ability to multiply, the ability to create, to go forward. And we're seeing all this climate change, global tyranny, green, whatever it is, it all comes in conflict with those ideas. They're saying, no, mankind is equal with the earth. They're hurting the earth, and we must then suppress mankind. We must suppress reproduction. We must quit having children. We must, even the carbon you breathe must be cap and trade, must be enumerated. It must be taxed, must be licensed. Your ability to breathe, your ability to live must be taxed and must be licensed under the United Nations umbrella. So that we can, for the good of the whole, so we can control this whole thing. That is the premise of all this. Then the question, when it's so ridiculous, it's either it's true or this is the most ridiculous thing since the Federal Reserve or since whatever. The big question then becomes, why are they pushing such a big scam? My question to you then is, it seems like this is all an effort on one level to deindustrialize the West, to bring the manufacturing, to bring prosperity, and to bring control, and to build up the Chinese communist system. That this is, in fact, a de facto power grab to take this dominion, this control, this power, our very life that we have, the very breath that we breathe, and give it over to this Chinese communist system that is going to have a social credit system and talk about total control. That's what it seems like to me. Is that true? Why?
I wouldn't say that the Chinese Communist Party came up with this idea, because
no,
they didn't.
No, I'm not
but
saying
what
that.
What is the case is that this is a form of economic suicide, which the Chinese are very happy to encourage the West and the United States to
participate in.
And the other aspect of this is that the American Constitution is a safeguard against the kind of things that you've been talking about. And indeed, the first chapter in the book talks about a conference that was held in Germany where this was overtly discussed, indeed with people who would be in the Obama administration. And the conference raised the most fundamental question of all. Are climate policies compatible with the survival of democracy? Because ultimately, Daniel, this is about freedom. This is a battle for freedom. And you can't – climate policy and the kind of things that are required to decarbonize and change people's lifestyle are simply incompatible with our idea of freedom. They cannot happen together. It's not just the economics of it are really, really bad, and particularly for America. America's energy position has been transformed by fracking. I mean, it's just America is now the world's hydrocarbon superpower. It's not just the coal that America's had. You know, we knew about the coal reserves that I think 500 years of coal reserves. It's a massive increase of output of oil and natural gas, which has transformed America's geostrategic position in the world, which means less exposure to the Middle East, not being dependent on nasty, quite unpleasant regimes, America becoming a net exporter. If you go down the route the Democrats want to go with decarbonization, deindustrialization, they're basically taking away America's energy advantage. So
okay.
I'll just give you...
Yep. No, hold on. I think that point, let's hammer that point home or maybe expound on this. I think what you just said is if these green policies are about to come to fruition, you correct me if I'm wrong. If we would succumb to these concepts and these ideas, the very thing that gives America, the United States of America, the home of the Declaration of Independence, the beginning of really real freedom in this world for thousands of years, started in 1776. The opportunity, if we are to listen to this, we have to trade it all in our strategic advantage of our hydrocarbon advantage, our energy advantage, our ingenuity advantage, all those things we must then lay at the altar of this green sacrifice, if you will, before this green movement to, so that we can give over everything that not only we've inherited in our country, but our very creator and our God gave us. We got to give it over and worship this other system and let whoever, China, whatever, do whatever they want and take us over. Basically, that's what you said. Yes or no?
Yeah, the climate movement sees the United States as a rogue state. They see your Constitution, which is, along with the Declaration of Independence, the greatest product of the 18th century, the Age of Enlightenment. They see that as an obstacle to the climate movement. And they're quite overt about
that. Yeah, it is.
Quite overt about it.
Of course. So then they got to destroy. So again, we're getting back to why they're doing it. They're not doing Al Gore is flying planes all over the place and buys beachfront property. He doesn't care about climate change or waters rising. This is obviously about something else. And what you're saying is it's about tyranny. And what is the object of their design? What is the object of their dismay? You just said it. The whole object of their dismay is this rogue nation here, the United States of America, that dares to call upon the very heavens to justify their existence and their rights and to protect them by law. That's what you just told me. Correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
My God. Wow. See, this makes me, talking to you, people like you, Rupert, are so important because you're able to take such complicated, confusing, and it's made that way on purpose and bring them down to brass tacks. You just said it in the last 2 minutes. If you don't listen to anything else, ladies and gentlemen, you have anybody else listen to any part of this interview, listen to the last 4 minutes of this interview. The climate people think the United States of America is a rogue nation and an evil, abhorrent law of the Constitution that is the bulwark, is the stop, is the very protectant to keep people from this green army of people coming in and controlling and taking over all your life. Do you hear what he just said? Why do you think we've been talking about having the Bill of Rights on your refrigerator? Why did they not talking about it in school? Our children don't know anything about this. Why do you think they've taken this away? I mean, the very tentacles of this isn't about saving a polar bear. A polar bear can swim 100 miles. It's about making sure that you can't reproduce, that you can't breathe, that you can't be free, that you can't exercise your dominion, that the very divinity given to you by your creator is then controlled and manipulated and taken in power grab so that they can create a world one world government where your life, your existence is taken over. That is what this is about. And anybody who says something different is either ignorant or trying to sell you something. This is a very important subject. This book is extremely important. Green Tyranny. Rupert, I'm sorry I got fired up, but you sent me over the edge today, buddy.
It's about ending American exceptionalism.
Bingo. Bingo. We got three.
I gather, Daniel, you actually had a president quite recently who did not believe America was exceptional at all. And what you have is what is you can term authoritarian rationalists, and you know who we've just been talking about, an authoritarian rationalist.
Well, you can say his name. It's not like Harry Potter, the person who said the name.
I just don't want to remind myself of those 8 years.
I'm sorry if I ranted on you. We got 2 minutes.
They were called benign despots, if you remember. Benign despotism.
Yeah, they're not benign, though. They're not benign, though.
They're not benign, no.
The book is Green Tear. Rupert, and listening to you and talking to you, I'm so glad I got to meet. I hope you come on again and talk about the other books that you do and come on in the future. It's been a pleasure. I hope I haven't offended you by, but this is just, this is everything we've been talking about, ladies and gentlemen. This is the future. This is how they're trying to erode your inheritance. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your inheritance. This isn't mine. This is your, this is all of ours. This is our inheritance given to us by our forefathers, our founding fathers, and by our creator. Are we going to let some chicken neck control freak out of Sweden with connections all the way to Russia and the KGB and Nazi Germany tell us that we can't live our lives and that we can't have children? Are we going to let this happen? Are we going to board everybody? Are we going to, what are we going to do? I'm not. And I don't think Rupert is either. And we have a minute left, Rupert. The floor is yours. Say whatever you want about anything. The book is fantastic. Get out and get it, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I mean, this is a battle between enlightened despots and believers in freedom. And when the chips are down, there's only one country where that battle really counts. And if it's lost in America, it is lost in the whole world. That is why it's really, what you're doing, Daniel, is just so, so important. It's also why 2020 is going to be a very, very important year.
Well, there you go. You got a minute more if you want to go ahead. I've talked plenty. They hear me all the time. They want to hear you, Rupert.
Well, global warming, what I end up in the book saying is global warming harbors a strong impulse towards the governing modes of the absolutist and the political culture of the totalitarian.
There you go.
And that's fundamentally why global warming is a huge threat to the American Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has been absolute Rupert, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. I really look forward to having you on in the future. A great time with you. The book, Green Tyranny, Exposing the Totalitarian Roots of the Climate Industrial Complex. Fantastic. God bless you across the pond over there, Rupert. We're holding the line here at the Power Hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Esten will be on later this week. Whatever you do in every of your life, be happy, be healthy, be successful, and be free just as God intends you to be. ThePowerHour.com. I'm going to be on the phones in a little bit. Give me a holler. God bless you, Rupert. Thank you.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that Carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominant.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using Carnivora because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking Carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased. pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call us today.